Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Mac Show. I am Jeff Gamet. I am your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And with me today on apparently the American Tech Network again, I have Dave Ginsburg. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well. It's Friday. Glad to be here. It's always look forward to hanging out with you guys and talking about all this stuff called tech and Apple.
You know, I'm looking forward to it as well, because it's just fun to get to talk with all of you. And Chuck, how are you doing?
I'm great, Jeff. I echo David's sentiments. I look forward to this every week, and those few times that I have to miss it, I really do miss it.
Same. Yep. So I am glad that you were here with me. You know, as long as we are doing this, I suppose we might as well just hop in to some stories. And hold on. I'm having muscle memory issues because the keyboard that I usually use during this show just isn't working this morning. So, you know, simple things like copy and paste apparently elude me now. All right. So we're starting with the obligatory story, Apple's earnings report. I know, total shock. Dave, I like the way I summed it up to you yesterday when you reminded me that the earnings report happened, mm-hmm. where without actually seeing anything from it, my assessment was Apple made all the money.
Yep.
They broke some records and then cautioned us that we live in uncertain times, which yep. I guess was about it.
Which they did reiterate after the fact that after we did my show yesterday, they're already saying that they're predicting that it's going to be not a good third quarter here. So who knows, the supply restraints and chip shortages and all that stuff. So, but overall, it looked like some great numbers. I mean, they had a great for being a second quarter, and you know, the March and the March timeframe here, it was nice to see. The only thing was down was iPads, I guess, and you know, down $7 billion. I mean it's still some great numbers, and the overall numbers that especially I love what Jason Snell does with the way they break things down, and you know, the iPhone's still dominant.
Yes. And for people that want to see what Jason has done, the link to his post at sixcolors.com is in our chat, and he does just fantastic charts for the earnings report. I think a lot of companies would love to be in the position Apple is in, with iPad sales being down, yeah. You know, down to 7.6 billion.
Yeah, what a shame. What a shame.
For a quarter.
But, 10.4 billion max. And go yeah. on and forth.
but you know, some of this, I mean, I guess I know we live in our own little Apple bubble, but as some of you know, I've been doing some traveling, and I look around, I see iPhones everywhere. I look around, I see iPads everywhere. I look around, I see Apple Watches everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, in the airports, you see a dominance of Macs. At NAB, which is where I was last week, you know, it seemed like, sure, there are PCs there, but most of the, certainly in the press room, you know, Macs are dominant. I've realized that they're still, you know, they're gaining market share. It's still pretty low, but it just, if you go by the anecdotal evidence, people want, and they want Apple products. And if they have a choice, they buy Apple products.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess we're kind of biased too, though. I guess we're kind of biased though, Sue, because I'm like that all the time. You, as all of us here, that we're out and about and around. This first thing I look at when somebody, I see somebody, do have that, they have an iPhone, or they have an Apple Watch, or always looking at their wrist, or looking what phone they're doing with. The same thing with the computers, you know, you just conscious of it.
But David, I agree with you, except that I see Apple products. You know, I look right. at the wrist, and I don't think, wonder what watch that is, you know,
right.
or, I see it. You know, right. anything like that. It's like, yeah, there's another one. There's another one. There's another one. You know, so I think that the observation, again, anecdotally, is valid.
Mm-hmm. Back when I was with Mac Observer, I was doing exactly what you do, Chuck, where I'm looking to see what people are using. But I was also looking to see if they're using things or products from other companies besides Apple, because that, you know, to me that really mattered. And what I noticed was a trend over the past few years where going into coffee shops, you'd see a bunch of PC laptops and a couple Macs. And then that transitioned and it became Mac laptops with the occasional PC laptop. And then the other part of the mix became iPads and what's the Microsoft thing? I want to say
Surface.
Surface.
Thank you. I keep wanting to say ThinkPad, but that's IBM.
Lenovo.
Or Lenovo, yeah.
I'm not in the computer business.
See, more muscle memory right there. Yeah, and even then, on the tablet side, I see more iPads than Surfaces.
Oh, for sure.
And then for smartwatches, I see two, basically. There's the Apple Watch, and then the Samsung, which I just forgot the name of.
Better you forget it.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But anyhow, yes, I know overall, not Apple is selling more, but boy, when you're out and about, you sure see a lot of Apple stuff.
You do.
And Jeff, certainly you used to.
Yeah, you made an interesting comment there. Smartwatches. You know, I'm shocked at the number of smartwatches, Apple and that, you know, the other brand too. But, you know, it seems like the mechanical watches are, you know, really, really going away. Occasionally you'll see somebody that, you know, in my humble opinion, you know, clearly are trying to make a show out of, you know, what they're wearing on their wrist, as opposed to looking for something functional. Now that's my interpretation. So I'm seeing it through obviously my lens, but you know, just the idea that the smartwatch has taken over and Apple has taken over the smartwatch market. In fact, really they didn't exactly created it, but they pretty quickly swooped in and dominated it and continue to. I think the more folks are seeing the benefits, all the things we've talked about for, you know, weeks and weeks and years on end, you know, not just the health benefits, but also the other benefits as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. And in the chat room, Mueller is offering constructive information, saying Garmin watches are looking strong and that he might buy one for cycling. Good point. Garmin watches have always had a strong standing in the fitness space. So yeah, that's another watch to be looking for when you're out and about. But I have noticed when you're in, I'll call it more casual settings, not fitness settings, you tend to not see the Garmin watches. I'm seeing those as more of a specific use case.
Jeff, I agree. And if I was just about to ask, because the little bit I'm familiar with Garmin watches, they are usually, there's a cycling watch, there's a golf watch, there's a watch for this athletic activity or that athletic activity. There's not a general purpose kind of Garmin watch. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
Okay. Mueller, if I'm wrong, correct me, please.
I mean, I believe they do have a more general use watch, fitness watch, but really they're focused on specific activities.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, Apple reminding us that we live in uncertain times, and talking about supply constraints, they did the same thing last quarter. And they had ridiculous sales for this previous quarter, and my expectation is that with the expectation they're setting for us right now, that we will all assume that there's going to be lower sales because of supply constraints, and there might be some, but it's not going to be enough to see a massive drop in Apple's quarterly numbers.
You know, I hope you're right. It's strange because Apple is doing what they have to do, and I think the responsible thing by giving those warnings, and yet, you know, they surprise us every quarter, and I'm concerned that at some point the caution is going to be justified, not through any fault of Apple's necessarily, just because, you know, they can't get component A or component B. And so, you know, it's going to, I mean, already I know the big crisis I think I heard this week was that the higher end MacBook Pros were being pushed off. The custom builds were being pushed off until like June. Mm-hmm. You know, and okay, yeah, that's not an ideal situation. And certainly it delays sales. And I don't know if either one of you listened to the earnings call, but someone asked that general question. And the question around that, and as to whether Apple thinks that there are replacement products that are bought when an Apple product isn't available. And I thought Tim handled it very well. It's like, yeah, sometimes, you know, there's an urgent need and they go somewhere else, but they don't think that that's necessarily the case all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you guys feel, but I can't imagine going and saying, I need a new tablet. And I can't get the iPad I want, so I'm going to go and buy one of those others. Just not going to happen.
Well, with me doing purchasing for work, I mean, I'm seeing it all the time with trying to get things. You know, docking stations 6 months out, getting monitors 6 to 8 months out. I mean, it's just supply strains for everybody. And yeah, even with Apple too. I mean, it's just it stinks, but it is what it is. I mean, we just can't get these chips.
But here's my prediction for Q3, and I guess it's being recorded, so there you go. My prediction is that with Apple's guidance about living in uncertain times, that we will see numbers that are year over year flat, and Q3 tends to be up from Q2, just historically, that's the pattern. So even flat, that would still put sales for Q3 a little bit higher than Q2.
Okay.
And that would be a win.
It would be.
Yeah. It will be a win, but at the same time, people will freak out because sales weren't up year over year. Yep. Because the stock market is all about emotion.
Yeah.
Emotions and, you know, high today, so
I've got a friend who runs a truck dealership. I mean, like a semi truck dealership, and I know they say that they have just acres of trucks sitting out there waiting to be finished. That they're essentially assembled, but they're waiting for it to be finished because they can't get the chips.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. And so It's not just Apple. In fact, it's not just the tech industry. It's everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can't get the chips to finish off the vehicles or the products, whether they be refrigerators, stereos, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just the way it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The third in the chat room has an awesome point. Says, I work in a mobile phone shop. I see if people come in for an Android, if we don't have it, they will buy something else. If they come in for an iPhone, they hold off until we have it. And I think that nails it right there. From what I have seen anecdotally, expanding this or extrapolating out to say tablets, like you were mentioning earlier, Chuck, if someone is looking to buy a tablet, and they go into a store and they're thinking, oh, maybe I'll get an iPad, but they don't have iPads available, then maybe they'll get an Android tablet, something from Microsoft, whatever, because they're just simply looking for a tablet. But if they're looking for an iPad specifically or an iPhone specifically, it's not available. They don't buy an Android device instead. They wait for what they actually wanted.
Yeah. One thing I didn't hear brought up, and I'm curious to see what you two gentlemen think. The iPad sales were down. Do you think that the low-end M1 MacBook has had an effect on that? I mean, because it wasn't that long ago we were talking about the iPads cannibalizing Mac sales. Now I'm wondering, because of the power of the M1 MacBook, excuse me. Yeah, PowerBook. Where did that come from? I have to wonder if that might not be having an effect on the iPad market, that people are saying, well, I was thinking about getting an iPad to replace my laptop or to be my laptop. And now with that power that's over on the Mac side, I'm going to go that direction.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were thinking about buying an iPad and the smart keyboard cover, and then you look at what you can get in a Mac laptop for the same amount of money, unless you really, really need the tablet, why not just buy the Mac?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at this point, if you're looking at an iPad with a smart keyboard cover, you can buy an off-the-shelf, not custom Mac configuration laptop even for less than an iPad. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I could see where for some people the money would dictate that.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yep. All right. Well, unless you, either of you, have more that you want to talk about for the earnings report, I say let's move on, because otherwise we're just rehashing the same numbers that we go over every quarter. Okay, so that being the case, let's talk about Apple's kit that they send out if you want to fix your own iPhone. And when I saw the photos of the kit, my first thought was, this looks like a prop piece from a sci-fi movie or from some action spy thriller. You know, like they get to that point where they have to get into the computer system to find the Stardust files. The music gets dramatic and they pop open this case and they start pulling pieces out and building the thing that breaks into the computer. I mean, that's what I'm seeing here. And I'm also seeing something that most people, if it showed up at their house to fix their own phone, they'd be like, nope, nope, nope. Not going to do this.
Yeah, it's just as we talked about, it's just crazy. I mean, it's crazy to want to even consider doing any of your self repairs. Yeah, I mean, Apple does a good job of taking care of these devices. I don't think we need to dabble in this, but a couple caveats with this. I mean, when you buy this kit, you rent this kit. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. It's $49 plus it'll include the tools that it's needed, and you have to specify which particular iPhone you're going to be working on. So, repair shops, forget it. You're not to be going in here ordering parts. You have to be, you definitely have to be authorized service center to be doing that. Mm-hmm. Cause you have to return the part that came from the other device, and they lock it down to that too. And it's interesting to see it all. This kit comes with incredible amount of tools besides just this this press and whatever, depending on whatever you're going to be replacing, whether it be a display or a camera or whatever it is. But a lot of tools in there for each iPhone.
Yes, and the photos that are in the Mac Rumors article that's in the chat, they don't give you scale for this. So look at the bottom corners of the case. And there you can see the wheels. This is a big enough case that it's actually a roller case.
Yeah, it's heavy.
These are big. These are like suitcase size packages that get sent to you.
I hadn't noticed that, Jeff. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, this is a decent sized Pelican case style case.
Yeah, I think for the average person, if they thought, I'll just fix this at home because I don't want to drive an hour to an Apple store, if this showed up at their house, I think it would be very intimidating. Now in the chat, Mueller's saying some people like to dabble, and that's absolutely right. And for those people, here you go. I mean, now you get to have all the cool stuff that Apple uses to fix an iPhone, at least temporarily, and do your own fix. And that's really cool. And I suppose that for some people, you know, if they live in an area where getting authorized service on their Apple gear, in this case on their iPhone, is just not practical, and they aren't interested in doing the thing where Apple sends you a box, you put your phone in the box, send it back to them, they fix it and send it back to you, then this would be an option, because you're not without your phone during the repair process. But I would not say this is something for the faint of heart.
No, not at all. If you want to do some light reading, you always, like, I just put a link in the chat here with the toolkit, but you can go back to the homepage of this and take a look at all the manuals. You can, it's kind of interesting to read through them, see how to do it, but I would never do it.
All right. Oh, go ahead.
Well, it just, you know, I can't help it. I know this is a little bit of hyperbole, so just go with me on it. But I mean, this feels like a do-it-yourself at home surgery kit, you know, where, okay, I have a hernia and I'm going, and yeah, just send me the box and I'll fix it myself. I don't think so. You know, I mean, if, and Mueller's right, you know, if you have the time or the inclination and you want to play and take a shot at fixing it, you know, then that's great. But I have to wonder how many people realistically are going to do this. So I'm happy to see Apple do it, because it shuts up the naysayers. It shuts up all the rights to repair people.
Right.
And I know I'm going to get letters for that. But, you know, if that's your thing, then you can do it. But and Apple is trying. I really do believe they're trying to make you a success by giving you the tools instead of telling you have to go out and buy a special tool set. You know, you can rent the tools, you can rent everything you honestly really need, you know, but at the same time, they are also saying it's still our product. We still want it to maintain quality, security, all those things. And so, yes, you're going to have to return the other parts to us. We're going to have to approve, you know, basically your repair. So I think it's serving both masters, maybe not quite as much as the right to repair people wanted, but enough that, you know, they should back off a bit.
You just hit on what I was going to bring up, the right to repair. And I think Apple is making an effort to control the narrative for right to repair as far as their products go. And Apple does want to maintain control, of course, because that's what they do. I think some right to repair people will be fine with this, because now they have access to what they need to do a repair. But I think that there's a part of the right to repair group, philosophy, whatever, that what they mean by right to repair is right to do anything with the device they want. And, you know, like you buy a car and then you start modding it and making it your own thing. Which to me is not repairing, it's modifying. But I think that's what some right to repair people want, and they see this as restricting their ability to control their own device.
I that's an interesting demarcation, Jeff, and I like it, because I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So. We will not see people standing on top of towers singing Apple's praises for this. On the other hand, hey, look what Apple's doing. If you'd asked me 2 years ago if Apple would ever offer a service like this, I would have said, no, of course not. That's not Apple's way. And here we are.
Yep.
And Mueller's comment, right to repair is about sustainability. And if Apple's green, they're happy you can fix your stuff. Too many companies are not are locking down their stuff to encourage new purchases. Yeah, of course. Companies want you to buy new stuff. I think in Apple's case, they have already built into their business model the fact that people hold on to their devices longer because they're making devices you can actually do that with. So yes, on one hand, locking down a device that you can't do any repairs yourself does help encourage the customer to just buy something new. On the other hand, if you're making something that's designed to work for years and you continue to support it for years, I think that plays into being green as well.
And you know, an iPhone is and an iPad, they're sophisticated pieces of equipment. And the thing is if you try to repair it and then something doesn't function, who are you going to call? You're going to call Apple and say, I need help with this. And that drives up Apple's support costs. And I know this is not always a popular opinion, but you know, one thing about every repair I've sent to Apple, you know, not only, and I don't have a great local service option. I mean, it's not horrible as far as driving away, but I've always found it just easier to, you know, take it to the FedEx store and ship it and have it shipped back. Because it happened so quick. But my repairs have always come back repaired, you know, and I've never had the issues. So I contacted Apple once and it's done. And it's done right. Whereas me having to try to get on the phone with someone and say, you know, well, I replaced my screen and now the Touch ID doesn't work, or the Face ID doesn't work, or you know, something else right. doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I think that gets lost on folks that this is it's a much more efficient way for the business that is Apple to do things. And we kind of go back to Jeff's point, you know, that I think some of these people want to mod things or they just want to dig around inside, and that's great, but then don't call Apple when you've screwed it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
DIY. Yep,
there you go.
DIY.
All right. I'm going to move us on. And let's talk about this new feature. I just did our quotes for those of you that are listening instead of watching. This new feature in iOS 15.5 beta that blocks sensitive locations from memories in the Photos app. And the locations that are being blocked, it's basically Holocaust related locations. Actually, looking at the list, when I say basically, I can take the word basically off of there. This is a list of Holocaust related locations. And so what this means is that when you get the automated, Chuck, thank you for letting me know that I put the wrong link. So here's what happened. I copied the link from my browser.
I just put it in there.
Thank you, Dave. And then pasted it without looking, but I used the keyboard that's dead right now. Turns out a keyboard that's not working will not actually do keyboard shortcuts.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. Technology. You'd think we're at the point with technology where it would just simply work. I want my right to repair my keyboard that isn't talking right now. Anyhow, okay, so the sensitive location thing. So this is in the memories feature that's built into the Photos app in iOS. And I'm derailing us again. Muller's saying bloody Apple keyboards. No, it's a Matthias. So in this case, bloody Matthias keyboards. I usually have such good luck with Matthias keyboards, but apparently not today. Anyhow, I have no idea what I was talking about. Oh, right. Photos app, memories, the blocking images from these Holocaust locations from showing up in the automated memories thing. And yes, the third is saying operator error. Clearly, I mean, just look. I mean, operator error. Anyhow, so on one hand, I'm thinking there's probably some value in this, but on the other hand, who is Apple to tell me what qualifies as a sensitive location in the images that are being presented to me in the automated memories thing?
Oh, I agree. Let's put a disclaimer here. This is beta, so we don't know what Apple is going to be doing once it becomes the final production version of iOS 15.5. I agree. Who is Apple to tell us what's sensitive, what isn't sensitive? Especially kind of calling out, and then ironically that the Holocaust, the Remembrance Day was, I believe, yesterday as we record here. That's what they're plugging in the sensitivity. And who's to say that, you know, you take these pictures, and are they gonna be something that you want blocked because it's a place you wanted to visit, you want to remember it, you want to be able to cherish that you were able to see those particular locations. So, I mean, yeah, this is going to be interesting to see where this goes, because I have this feeling this is going to change.
Well, okay. Other side of this, how much say have you had to date in the memories collections that are being auto-generated for you?
None.
None. So if Apple deems that they don't want to show, or they don't want you to have a vacation where, you know, you went to the Eiffel Tower and then you went off to see a Holocaust memorial, and then you're off to go and see museums in London, or why should the part where you visited the Anne Frank House or whatever not be included in that, right, in that trip? To me, what I think would be a more interesting use of this is if it could figure out context for some of these photos. Like, for example, you go to a family funeral and you take some photos of people while you're there. And they're photos that you want because, you know, it's you with someone else in your family and it matters to you. But maybe having a memory come up with snappy music behind it where it's showing you hanging out with a bunch of people at a funeral. Okay, maybe that's one that shouldn't happen.
Yeah. Jeff, I agree with you on that. This is not censorship, but it's trending in sort of that direction where somebody else is making a decision for me. And that bothers me. I mean, I'd almost rather see if there's really this need to play with the auto-generated memories thing. Okay, so let me go in and edit, or let me go in and tag photos that I don't want included in my memories. I still want them. I just don't want them included in my memories. That part of this, when I saw this, it's like, okay, I can see this being respectful for, you know, one group of people based on one event. I can also see it, you know, okay, so what if I go to Brazil for Carnival and spend some time on the beach where the bikinis look more like dental floss? Is that something that, you know, somebody's going to say, well, we don't think that should be included in your memories and therefore is not going to be, you know, included? Let's just dip into politics for a second, which is really dangerous. And I make a trip to Washington, D.C., and somebody says, well, you know, who wants to see pictures of you in Washington, D.C.? Who wants to remember that? You know, I have a real problem with the idea that we're going to start, and maybe machine learning will get to a point where we could do that. It's sort of like what you were saying, Jeff, you know, that it can recognize the context of a photo. That's asking a lot, but maybe you can do it. Lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's other things that can help with determining that context. So you have the location, which is what's being used with this feature that's in testing right now. But then add into that, what was the date? What was the time of day? What else is in the image? So let's use the White House as an example. If I go in and go on a trip and take photos outside the White House today, that seems to me like something that's reasonable and not sensitive. But if I, by chance, happen to be in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, then maybe those are sensitive images, because maybe I happen to be there around the time the whole coup insurrection thing suddenly took off. And then I'm right there and I'm like, holy crap, I should document this before I run away, get some photos and leave. Okay, I could see where maybe not having those come up under a memories, you know, your DC vacation. Oh, look, we're at the Smithsonian. Oh, look, we visited the DC Apple store. Oh, look, here's people running around trying to overthrow the government. Wee.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That. So, you know, interesting. I mean, who knows? Maybe this is just a trial balloon to see what kind of response they got. No.
And this wouldn't be the first time Apple has tested a feature just to see what sort of reaction they get, and then decide later on not to include it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. Okay, we could do more topics, but I'm thinking instead we should get all excited because TSO Host is our sponsor today. And TSO Host is awesome because they are here making sure that we have the resources we need to bring live shows to you every week and to have a place to host the recordings so that you can watch or listen at your leisure. And without that bandwidth and that server space, we would just kind of be dead in the water because we would not be able to bring quality content like this on the American Tech Network the second to you every single week. So what they're asking of us as BTN fans is not a lot. What they'd like us to do is head over to social media and give them a shout out online and thank TSO Host for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. And that only takes a minute, and it's not difficult to do. Just, I mean, it's easy. Actually, it's so easy. Hold on, I'll write it right now.
Sausage getting made, folks. Sausage getting made.
Mm-hmm. How do you hear his keyboard, too?
How do you spell network? O-R-K. There. It's in the chat room now. Okay. There. I did the hard part for you. I've typed. Okay. So that's done. And Mueller's saying the keyboard doesn't work. Fake news. Oh no, this keyboard works fine. It just happens to be the visual and mechanical dexterity of the operator. Yeah. Anyhow, so give them a shout out and thank TSO Host for being here and supporting us. Also, if by chance you need to buy domains or have some hosting, well, that's what they do. So hit them up for that and use the discount code BTN20 to get a discount on their services, because not only are they helping us out, but they're being generous and giving everyone discounts. So thank you to TSO Host for being here and sponsoring us. And now comes the most amazing part of the show, the part where I have to try and do what Patrice does for me every week and tell you about the chat. So we have a chat that is awesome because you can participate in real time with us while we're recording. So what you need to do to find the chats to find a chat and see all the links and the discussion that goes along with every show, if you go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, then you get this really pretty, wow, that's actually really cool looking, this this calendar. And it highlights the days where there are shows. And so you can click on the date for the episode that you want to find. So like today would be, what month is this? April. So today would be April 29th. And then you can click on that and you can see everything that we have in there for the chat. And if you want to participate live, when you go to britishtechnetwork.com and you click watch live, there's, I think, a link there that gets you into the chat. I'm looking right now because why not? Oh, yeah, there's a button. It says open chat room, just like that. That's really cool. Okay. Anyhow, so it's much more eloquent when Patrice says it. And but there you go, britishtechnetwork.com/chat, then you're on your own. All right, so it is now time for the cool things, and I cannot believe I managed to kind of get through that. Cool things. Dave, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I have this simple little fan here, and it's a desk fan, but the nice thing about it is it's small like this. And it does plug into USB, but the great thing about it is it's whisper quiet. Because so when I get really warm and I'm sitting here at my desk, I can have this run, and really, it really cools you off. And it's not that expensive, like $7. And
it's $7. Yeah.
Yeah. You can just, it's got three different speeds, plugs into USB, plug in a USB connector. But, you know, especially on me being a podcaster, I want to have a fan that's going to be pretty quiet. I can put it below me if I want. The sound doesn't seem to pick up as bad, but I think most people want it just to stay cool. It does keep you really cool. I mean, I have it at a bedside sometimes, so I get really warm. Even my wife said that, boy, that thing is really, really cool. Can you get me one of those? So now we both have them on our bedsides in case we get warm. So,
nice.
And of course, the summer's coming. So, but it's technology because it's USB. So it can be pretty much plugged in anywhere that's a USB port. And yeah, it's a quick little item.
All right. I just had a really bad idea. Tape one of these to the dashboard in your car.
Yeah, you could do that.
I mean, it's not that big, but it would still block.
It's got different angles.
Oh, it's actually not that big.
Actually, you could hear it. It's, you can barely hear it. So it's pretty quiet.
That's pretty quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is one time, I suppose, when it is appropriate to say, that's really cool.
Yeah. So, I know it's not much of a technology, but hey, we always need a fan to keep us cool.
Sure. And only $7. Yep. Awesome. Okay, Chuck, what do you have for us?
Well, I'm going to go a little more expensive. April was a bit of a travel month for me, both business and pleasure. And I was back on planes for the first time in a while. And it reinforced the desirability of having a noise-canceling headset. AirPods are great, and even AirPods Pro are great, but there's nothing like something that goes over your ears to help block out the sound. And then when you flip on the noise cancellation, you're pretty much in your own little world. And believe me, you know, if there are children on the plane, you want this. You want this badly. Usually, you know, it's great for watching movies or having music, but if I want to try to get some sleep, I just turn on white noise on my phone and let it come through there. And so I can control exactly the level and the evenness and just drop right off. And so the link I put in are the Bose Quiet Comfort 35s. That's what I have. There's a Quiet Comfort 45 out now that I have not tried, but these have been my go-to for a long time and will continue to be. And David is modeling his now.
I love these things. I always have to use these for travel. These are specifically for travel because they just block all the noise out of the airplane.
Yep.
I got a trip coming up on them. Make sure I have them with me. And you've got a nice little case.
Exactly, David. You know, I have my little trip checklist and that's where it is. But I will tell you this. I don't know if you've flown Southwest Airlines or not, but they tend to go off script at times. So I happily took mine off as I was flying into my home airport because they said, you know, we're coming into final approach, tray tables in there and, you know, folded up seats in their upright position, and be sure your seatbelts are connected and tightened because the captain wants to try something. and the people who've not flown Southwest before look around nervously, like,
and scramble to make sure their seatbelt is tight.
Yeah, and everybody else is laughing about it. So, you know, you want to make sure you're listening to the announcements. But, you know, for the main part of the flight, when you want to get some rest or enjoy a movie or some music, these are what you need.
That's awesome. The third is backing you up on that, saying that they're amazing headphones, they're indestructible, they've had them for years, and have been around the world with them. And
right, with you, third.
Years ago, I bought a set of the Quiet Comforts. So this is so long ago. It's back when I was married. And my wife at the time, she was doing a lot of traveling. So I bought a set for her for all of her traveling. And there was no way that I was ever going to be able to get those out of her hands for any reason, because they were just that good. And like the third said, practically indestructible.
The battery life is phenomenal too.
Yeah.
And it should be mentioned that, you know, it can pair with your iPhone and your iPad, which is a really nice,
there's an app too.
Thing. Yeah. There's an app that controls it, but you know, that way you can switch from phone to iPad pretty seamlessly. So that if you need to take a call, well, on your Mac too.
Yeah, because I've turned it on and that it'll tell me, either here's my iPhone or my iPad or my Mac, and I think you only have up to two devices, but it'll tell you which one it sees, and it'll connect to whichever one it's ready to connect to.
Yeah, so they're awesome. They're a little expensive, I grant you, but this is a value purchase, because the value you get out of them is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Mueller says that he destroys him, but that's Mueller. Everyone else, I think, has better luck with keeping them in one piece. Cool. Okay, so my thing this week is a free app, and there's a little story that goes along with this. So a week or so ago, I was at a family birthday party. And for a kid, and someone had a Rubik's Cube there, and everyone was like messing around with it. And then one of the other adults that was there said, "Well, the only way I know how to solve this is to pull it apart and put the pieces back together in the right order." And they're trying to break the cube. And I'm like, just stop. And so everyone wanted to see the cube solved. And so we decided, well, let's see if there's an app that can tell us how to solve a Rubik's Cube. It turns out there is one. Well, there's several, but the one that I found is free and it's really cool. It's called Cube Solver AR. So what you do is you take your Rubik's Cube and set it up so you're looking at three of the sides, and then point your iPhone at it and it scans the sides. And then you flip the thing over like 180 degrees. So now you see the other three sides and it looks at those three sides. And now it has the full layout of the Rubik's Cube. And then it instantly says, here's the moves you do to solve it. And it was so simple. And like every time we would mess it up and then scan the cube again, it gave us a correct solution. We did have a problem where occasionally it couldn't figure out where the edges of the cube were, but it draws where it thinks the edges are and gives you little handles you can drag to make sure that it, you know, it's actually getting the sides of the cube correctly. You know, it'll be kind of close, but not quite. And you just kind of move it a little bit and then it's fine. And it was great. And of course, everyone loved seeing the iPhone scanning the cube and then coming up with a solution. I think for some of the people, it was actually more fun to watch the iPhone figure it out than to watch someone go through the steps after it gave the solution. So anyhow, and this is free. And for those of you that are now thinking, well, which types of Rubik's cubes does it work with? Because you can get them with multiple sides, well, not sides, but rows. So this is for the traditional 3x3 Rubik's cube, not like the bigger ones. But there you go. So it's free. And now if you need to solve a Rubik's cube easily, there you go. And now the third is saying, I think Rubik's came out with a digital cube that walks you through solving it. That would be kind of cool too. All right. Well, maybe we'll have another cool thing after I track that down.
There we go.
All right. Well, this has been fun. Dave, where can people find you?
You can find me at InTouchWithiOS, InTouchWithiOS.com. You can go on my YouTube channel at YouTube.com/DaveG65. Watch the show live or watch any of the shows or listen to any of the shows. You find me on Mac Voices Live every Tuesday night and have a lot of blast there. That's at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And you'll find me on Twitter at DaveG65. Great job.
And thank you for being here. Absolutely. Chuck, where can people find you?
MacVoices.com is where you can find everything I'm doing. We are about to launch into the interviews I recorded at NAB. Right now we're wrapping up some of the Mac Voices Live shows that David and Jeff have been on, and David was kind enough to guest host for me. We do Mac Voices Live, as David said, every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, whatever time that is, wherever you are. And we'd love to have you in the chat room at youtube.com/MacVoicesTV. And on all the socials, you can find me as at Chuck Joyner. Jeff, I hope you get your keyboard straightened out.
Oh, I'm sure I will eventually. And thanks. Muller's asking, do you have Scottish accents on Mac Voices? And I'm assuming that when you do, they're very poorly done.
Well, if we do, they're usually attached to Scottish people. So I think they'd be fairly well done.
Okay. In that case, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, jgamut on both, youtube.com/jgamut for my videos, and now a long list of podcasts. So Mac Voices Live, most Tuesdays, In Touch with iOS, most Thursdays, Thursdays for the big show, Fridays for the Mac show, The Context Machine with Brian Chaffin, since we have teamed up again. Also, just recently, I did The Addition, which is Charlotte Henry's show. And we ended up talking about Elon Musk, because why not? That was a lot of fun too. And other shows, I kind of get around. So, wow, thank you to both of you for being here today on the American Tech Network. You rock, and this has been absolutely fun. And Muller is saying, hey, we should have Charlotte on the show. Muller, we should talk, because I already told her she's welcome anytime. So now it's just a matter of getting coordinated to have her show up. Yes, thank you to all of you, both of you. You rock. And everyone that's here with us live today, whether you're just watching or if you're also in the chat room, thank you for being here. You are absolutely awesome. And I love you for joining us. Those of you that are tuning in or watching, who are tuning in and watching or listening later, man, I really need to work on my diction. Thank you for being part of this as well. All of you rock. And hey, check out the photo show because that's always a blast. And check out the new show because hey, it's still happening. So if you're supporting the new show, thank you. You're awesome. If you can do anything to help support the new show, please do, because that would just be awesome too. And hey, thank you to TS Ojos for being our sponsor today, and give them a shout out on social media. I already wrote the thing for you. All you have to do is copy and paste. It's right there in the chat. And wow, thank you again. Next Thursday, come back for the big show. Next Friday, come back for the Mac show. And everyone have an awesome weekend. We'll see you again next week.